This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Triple J has just wrapped up a massive cultural event, the hottest 100 of Australian songs, and the countdown lit up radios and social media feeds right across the country with everything from INXS and Powderfinger to the Veronicas, Hilltop Hoods, landing in the top 10. But it's not just about what makes a great Aussie anthem. It's also about who gets remembered, who doesn't, and why.
Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know. And if she doesn't, we'll make it up.
Good afternoon, Lauren Rosewarne.
Hello, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Now, countdowns like this one seem to stir up, I suppose, a lot of emotion and national pride, don't they? Why do you think they reveal about our cultural identity?
Look, I think the first thing we need to mention is the subjectivity of these kind of lists, in the sense that in very few things in relation to culture can be measured by greatest, right? You know, if two people are running, there's a clear winner. In this case, people voted in terms of things, songs that they've loved, right? Well, that's not a great, you know, what does it mean to say it's the hottest 100? But then is gauging popularity the best way to measure this? It's not that there's a best way. It's one way. And so I think we just need to sort of plant that seed that there was always going to be debate about this list, as there are in any popularity contest, because you and I are going to have different views as to what should be on there. That said, I think that's kind of encapsulates it, because even if it is a popular vote and they got, you know, a couple of million contributions in terms of people filling in their greatest songs, there's still some trends, obviously, and that leads to a whole lot of things, like you mentioned in the opener, who isn't on the list, who is perhaps on there that shouldn't be, and a big question, what constitutes Australian to be on that list? You played some Crowded House. Are we in agreement that Crowded House is even Australian?
I was thinking that as I played it. Are they from New Zealand?
Yeah, because this is, look, I would say, yeah, well, they weren't. Well, the members of it, or at least most of the members of it, are New Zealanders, but the band was formed in Melbourne. Is that enough to make it Australian? I remember years ago a joke was made. I think it was about Russell Crowe. It was kind of, if you've ever flown over Australia, you're basically Australian. And if we like you, we're keeping you. And this is certainly the case with Russell Crowe, with Crowded House, even someone like Olivia Newton-John, born in England. At what point do we give you Australian-ness?
That's really interesting, because Crowded House, Don't Dream It's Over, and then if you look at number one, which was INXS, Never Tear Us Apart, I mean, they're not exactly hard rock banger songs, are they? We're talking more power ballad almost. What does that say about our taste in music?
Yeah, so for me, when I read the list, my first thought was, where are the Saints, right? The Saints are one of Australia's, I suppose you could say, best known punk rock bands. They're not on the list. Now, that's okay, because we could say, well, okay, Lauren, you love them. Not everyone evidently loves them. That's all right, fine. But that genre, sort of harder rock, punk rock, is not represented well on the list. But is that a question of what does Triple J play in terms of music? If they're not playing that kind of music, it's the same you could argue as classical or other genres that aren't on there. If they're not playing it, why would you expect people to vote for it? And it's the same, a lot of the criticisms I've read online are people saying there's hardly anything from before the 1980s. So there was criticisms, where are the Skyhooks, where are the Easy Beats, that's for example. True. Okay, but Triple J's listeners wouldn't be the age of people who would have grown up listening to the Easy Beats, right? For me, for example, the Easy Beats, my knowledge of them comes exclusively from the Big M ad that played when I was a kid that had Friday on My Mind on the soundtrack, right? I don't know the Easy Beats outside of that. And so people younger than me would have even less attachment to that band. And therefore the voters the ABC have released were between, disproportionately, between 18 and 29 years old, at least most of the people the biggest demographic of voters were in that age group, they're not going to know Skyhooks or the Easy Beats, or at least not have an attachment to them in terms of filling in a survey. So that also skews the kind of music that's represented.
I feel like sort of the fact that, I mean, I used to listen to Triple J when I was at university, be on my car radio all the time. And obviously I don't listen to it anymore, but I felt like this was almost like a call to previous listeners as well, to almost like come back into the fold. But you're right, it doesn't reflect the audience that they currently target.
No, it's an odd thing, because to say that, I actually was quite surprised that 18 to 29 was the biggest chunk of the voters, because I would say they're not the radio listeners at all anymore. Mm. When you look at particularly a challenge for the ABC that is constantly mentioned, and I say this as someone who has been employed by the ABC, one of the biggest concerns they have is targeting young people, be it radio or TV. There's this constant obsession with how do we target young people, because young people are consuming media very, very differently. And the idea of listening to the radio now in a world of podcasts and streaming is becoming less of a default entertainment. So I found it weird, or at least interesting, that they were the biggest demographic of voters, when if you look at the songs, they were songs from when I was at high school kind of thing, or even a little bit sort of older slash younger than that, but not the modern, not the new music that would have been new for 18 to 29 year olds today.
If you've just joined us, we're chatting with Lauren Rosewarne about the hottest 100 of Australian songs countdown and what it reveals about music, memory and identity in Australia. Just on that, Lauren, these kinds of countdowns often get dominated by people voting for the music of their youth. How do you see, I suppose, generational memory being recorded in such countdowns?
Yeah, look, this is interesting, because again, that issue of people complaining no Easy Beats, no Skyhooks, I would ask, did you actually fill in the form? Because it's one thing to say, to look at the finished product and say, my favourites aren't on there, but yet also not have participated in this because you were never a Triple J listener and you aren't one today, right? Mm. So I think there's that aspect of it, kind of like with Logies, right? I mean, I've never voted in for the Logies, but every year there's, oh, they shouldn't have got the gold. Okay, who should have? And did you fill in a coupon, right? And I think there's a bit of that here as well. It's a sort of, you know, a hindsight of people feeling like they've got a say, kind of like how you and I have spoken many times about the American presidential election. Everyone there has a really strong opinion, but only half the people actually, you know, get off the couch and actually vote. And I think this is one of those examples. Everyone feels like they've got some level of authority on what constitutes the best Australian music, but how many actually voted? But like all things, you and I had a conversation about this many, many, many months ago, about this concept of the reminiscence bump. And it's that time in our lives when we're chock full of hormones and the first time we're feeling a bunch of new stuff. And that's the music we tend to have the biggest sentimental attachment to. And that usually happens around sort of 14 to 17 years old. So we've all got a bit of a skew towards that music.
Lauren, can I confess something to you? I reckon for the first time ever, I've voted.
Go on.
I've voted in the Logies this year. Not the TV. It's TV Week.
Did you? Yes. Who did you feel so passionate? Who did you feel so passionately about?
Someone was, one of the presenters said, could you please vote for us? And I felt sorry for them. And I thought, well, no one's going to vote for you, so I'll go and vote for you.
Okay. Well, actually, now you get to answer a question I've got. Is it done digitally, or do you still have to buy the TV Week to do it?
No, you do it on the website now.
Okay. I was wondering this, because I've never done it.
Does TV Week still exist as a magazine?
Well, that's what was going to be my next question, but you can't answer that, because clearly you didn't buy it to fill the coupon in.
Because it always had the centerfold, didn't it? The, you know, the heartthrob.
It did. The pin-up.
Did you have the pin-up on the back of your door?
Yeah, because I still recall being sort of 6 or 7 and having Elf on the wall, which is really interesting, because I wonder what it was that Elf, who set my heart on fire as a child, then made me want him on the wall. But that's a question for a psychologist, not for on air.
Always good to chat to you, Lauren. We're going to go out with the number one, which is In Excess, Never Tear Us Apart. We'll talk to you next week.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Warren.
Thank you. That's Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.